This is On Being's Unheard Cuts. I'm Krista Tippett. You're listening to my unedited conversation with Sherry Maples. She is a licensed attorney and a clinical social worker and co-founder of the Center for Mindfulness and Justice in Madison, Wisconsin. I spoke with her on August 27, 2003, at a retreat in Green Lake, Wisconsin. This interview is included in our program, Brother Ty, a radio pilgrimage with Thich Nhat Hanh. Download the MP3 of the produced show at onbeing.org. So we've been a monthly national program. We've just become a weekly national program on public radio stations. And this will be an hour around Thich Nhat Hanh and sort of based at this retreat. And I interviewed him yesterday, which was wonderful. Mm-hmm. So that'll be sort of the
lucky
anchor.
You.
Yeah, it was. So that'll be sort of the anchor of the program. Mm-hmm. But then we'll also have sounds from Plum Village and from this experience, and then a few voices from people who are here.
Okay.
So I just want to start by asking you, you know, how you first came in contact with this teaching and this man.
Well, it was almost, it depends on whether you believe in accidents or miracles or coincidences or miracles. I had read a book and was kind of curious. You don't think much about this stuff as a cop. I'd been a cop for 19 years now. At the time, I'd been a cop for 7 years. And I found I was on this call where involving a stolen moped where I had to take the stolen moped somewhere. The short story is I hurt my back very badly pulling the moped out of the squat of the trunk, so had a worker's comp injury that needed to be treated by a chiropractor, decided to go to the chiropractor that was closest to the building that I started my shift at, my patrol shift, which was downtown at the time. So I went to this chiropractor who had a flyer for a retreat in Mundelein, Illinois in 1991 on her bulletin board. I'd read a book. I was kind of curious. I thought, why not? So I went to this retreat and kind of changed my life.
Can you tell me some more about that? What happened? What changed your life?
When you have a chance to sort of deeply experience the practice, the idea of learning to stop doing and to start being, and at that retreat, it was a little longer, and there was much more silent time. We only talked really during the things that were together. We maintained noble silence, which was a very new concept for me. But I started to experience a lot of just the refreshing wonders, sort of started to be able to taste the divinity of life at that retreat in a way that I had never, ever experienced. I wouldn't have had words for it then, but it was what became very, very clear to me is that if you can live in the present moment, there are all kinds of wonders available to be able to nourish and refresh yourself with. Well, as a cop, what started to happen to me there got very interesting because I don't know if you attended the 5 mindfulness trainings last night, but that was one of the things that happened at my first retreat, and I just assumed, well, I'd listen to this, but I can't do that. I'm a cop, you know. I mean, I might be in a position where I have to kill somebody at some point. I can't think about taking these. And Sister Chan Kong, who is one of probably the senior monastic here, was at that retreat, and she pulled me aside, and she had this very wonderful conversation with me, the essence of it being, who else would we want to carry a gun except somebody who will do it mindfully? Of course you can take these trainings. Hmm. And I thought about it over the course of the week, and it felt right to me. So I did. I took the 5 mindfulness trainings. And then when I came back, and what happened to me is my heart started to soften and kind of break open for the first time. I had gotten very mechanical about how I was doing my job. I had no idea that I had shut down that way. And I came home, and I go on probably, especially that first week when it was so new and everything felt so fresh, I started to understand that on a very, very deep level that it's possible to bring this into your work as a cop, because as my energy started to change, the energy that I got back from other people started to change, even including the people that I had to arrest and take to jail. But probably the first example of that was, as I was on a domestic violence call, and it was one of these calls where I would have just arrested the guy. I would have just, hey, enough's enough. You know, he was felt very strongly about the issue and mandatory arrest. As a female officer who's had a lot of contact with domestic violence victims, and this was a scenario where breaking up is hard to do, and they were exchanging. There was a little girl, and they were exchanging custody, and he was kind of holding the little girl hostage, not wanting to give her back to mom. And there had been no violence that had taken place, but both mom and the little girl were very scared and intimidated. And ordinarily, I would have said, "That's it," slapped the handcuffs on him, taking him to jail. But something stopped me, and it was I had just come out of this retreat, and I got the little girl, got him to give me the little girl, took care of her, got her and her mom set, told them just to leave, went back. And I just talked to this guy from my heart, and within 5 minutes, I mean, I've got this big gun belt on, I'm about 5'3", right, and this guy's like 6'6", and he's bawling, you know, and I'm holding this guy with this big gun belt on and everything, and he was just in incredible pain. And that's what I started realizing we deal with is misplaced anger because people are in incredible pain. So I ran into him 3 days later in a little store on Willie Street where I lived at the time, and this guy comes, he sees me off duty, picks me up, gives me this big bear hug, and said, "You saved my life that night, thank you." And so when you have experiences like that and you start to realize, well, what am I doing different here? I mean, really, it's about softening your heart. When you're a police officer and you do this work, you need to find a way to be able to maintain both the compassionate bodhisattva within you and the fierce bodhisattva, and know when each is called for and how to combine the two. And once you start down this path, it's possible to learn that. And that was the beginning for me. It was very powerful, very wonderful.
And have you been able to maintain that? Now, this has been 12 years or something, right?
It's been, 12 years. Well, in the beginning, it wasn't strong enough for me, so it would sort of come and go, and I'd still experience these incredible waves. But that once you've experienced it, you know you can come back to it. So that first retreat gave me great hope and great faith in my ability to come back to the present moment and nourish myself in the present moment and be in the present moment. So no, I couldn't always maintain it, but as my practice got stronger, it got easier. And then, you know, I started moving through the ranks. At the time I went to the retreat, I can't remember if I was a police officer or a sergeant, but eventually it got pretty important to me to find a sangha, so a practice community, because I was pretty much doing this individually. And then I started being able to extend it in other ways. Okay, how can I build a sangha within my police department? How can I make this a family? How can I start thinking about building a place where I get to be who I want to be because they're being who they want to be, where we all support each other in doing that? How can I build an organism within the police department where each police officer, when they're alone, where nobody's looking, represents all of us in a way that we'd feel really good about? And so, of course, I can't talk like this in the police department. I have to translate the language, but I've been a cop for almost 20 years, so I can do that. And now I'm the captain of personnel and training, so my job is I hire everybody for the Madison Police Department. I train everybody. I'm in charge of recruiting, hiring, the pre-service academy, in-service training. So I'm now at a position where I get to do just about everything I want. So I get a lot of opportunities to do this and to combine. The way I would talk about it is, look, we need certain... We don't lose police officers tactically. We've gotten very good at with our equipment, our technology, and our training. In terms of from 1950, fewer and fewer police officers have been killed in the line of duty. Where we're losing people is emotionally. I gave Ty those statistics. I mean, there are 2 to 3 times as many officers killing themselves now as are being killed in the line of duty. And from a training perspective and a risk perspective, if it's preventable, I mean, if it's predictable, it's preventable. So I started thinking about how to move some training resources to emotional areas. And I certainly don't talk about But I do. I actually have taught 38 officers the practice of mindfulness in terms of eating, sitting, and walking meditation. Some people who I thought would never be interested, as one of several tools available to them to deal with the stress in their lives and the emotional and biological roller coaster of being a police officer. I mean, we deal with people at their, as somebody once said, at their maddest, saddest, and baddest. And if you can't find a way to take care of yourself, you're just going to keep responding to the energy that's coming at you and escalate it.
Have you seen that help other police officers as well?
I think other police officers that understand that this work has to be done from your heart, that it doesn't mean you give up being tough. It doesn't mean you give up your ability to protect people, your ability to go hands-on when you need to, but you do it from a place of awareness and softness and compassion, are the people that are happiest doing their jobs and the ones that enjoy it the most. Mm. They're the ones that don't shut down and the ones we don't lose. So from an organizational standpoint, it is a very important message to and a very important thing to support in fellow officers.
Did you have a hand in making this retreat happen? Is that right?
This retreat was pretty much came about as when I decided to take my practice further in about 2000, I really got much more committed. So I'd been practicing for 9 years. And then I decided I wanted to become a member of the order, a core member of the order, and receive the 14 mindfulness training. So I spent a year kind of getting ready for that and studying with one of the local Dharma teachers and declaring my intention. And then I went out to Plum Village last year.
In Vermont or in France?
No, in France.
In France.
In France for 3 weeks, which was probably one of the most wonderful 3 weeks of my entire life. And I hadn't realized how much healing I still had to do. You know, as a police officer, you're so often a victim and so often an oppressor. You know, you really have to come to grips with both of those. But it occurred to me when I was out there, because it was so healing for me to be out there. And I wrote a letter to Ty and put it in the bell, because when you want to receive the mindfulness trainings, that's one of the requirements to receive the 14 and become a core member. And you never know if Ty reads this stuff or what, but I found out since then he reads everything. But he got my letter, which talked a lot about sort of where I'm at with all this, and the next day gave this 2-hour Dharma talk on the different faces of love and why it's possible to be a bodhisattva and carry a gun. And I'm sitting in the back of the room bawling my head off basically through this whole thing. Just like, it was just unbelievable to me. And then I started thinking about, I just started having this image up while I was out there of my coworkers, other police officers, holding hands and doing walking meditation together and making peaceful steps on the earth together. And and I'm not even a very visual person, so it was interesting to me that image popped into my mind a lot. And I mentioned it during working meditation with one of the people. She said, you know, you can make that happen. So by the end of the retreat, I got on the stage with Ty, and I asked him if he would do a retreat for police officers. And he said yes, and this is it.
It's a great story. It's very moving.
Mary.
Yeah.
Have you ever had to use force, or God forbid, use your gun since you've begun this training, or face a decision whether or not to?
Kristen, ask a question, maybe.
Okay. Have you had to, since you began this training, have you had to make a decision to use your gun, and was that different?
One of the things I think people don't understand about police officers is, for the great majority of us, we'll have it out several times. There are very, very few of us that actually ever have to fire our weapon at another human being, even in large cities. I'm not just talking about in cities of 220,000 where I live in Madison. But one of the things that I have found is that although all of us take an oath to be able to do that, if necessary, there are very few people that ever recover from doing it. Very few people that ever recover from doing it. In some departments, it's an automatic disability because they don't trust you to be able to make that decision again once you've made it. And so the answer from my standpoint is no. Thank God I've never been in the position where I've had to do that. But as the captain of personnel and training and as somebody who's in charge of a lot of the functions that happen, I've certainly been in the position now of having to support six officers who have had to make that decision, two who never made it back, three who the verdict is still out on, whether they do or not. But I think I have never had to do that. But when one of us does it, it feels to me like I do it too, that they do it for all of us, that they do it not only for me as a person who could be in the situation. The last situation involved a very good friend of mine who was one of four officers who confronted an armed suspect, and he turned around and started firing at them. And there, at that point, there's no choice. That's what you take an oath to do, to serve and protect. And any one of us realize it could have been two of the people involved in that have inside jobs. They were on their way to work when the call came. So anybody knows that they can be in that situation. And the way that I feel about it is that although they pulled the trigger, they did it for me. They did it for the community that I live in. And I have to be part of the healing process that happens for them now, part of helping them live with the ramifications of having had to do that. So part of how I do that is from a work standpoint, from a debriefing standpoint, I'm having them talk with young officers. But part of how I do that is to spend personal time with each one of them, too, and get them the resources they need to heal and to work through it.
Do you know how many law enforcement officers are at this retreat?
Well, I can tell you there are 55 people in the criminal justice system. I don't know that I've seen all of the law enforcement officers. If my best guess is there would be 25 to 30 of the 55 people that are in the criminal justice system.
And are they from all over the country?
Yeah.
Okay. And tell me what you are hearing or experiencing of the effect this is having on your colleagues. I suppose for some of them, this is a completely new experience.
Well, at first it was kind of a mini revolt because they really thought if we could have just had a retreat for police officers, it would have been incredible, but we couldn't get the numbers to come. Maybe next time. So we put them at first in a larger group with criminal justice professionals, and that was unfortunate. I wish from day one I just would have put them with other police officers. Now I've just got all the police officers together, but they didn't want to be in a position where one more time they had to explain themselves to somebody. They really wanted to. They really wanted to talk about. It's a very, very big thing having to face the possibility of having to kill somebody that you could face every day. They wanted to talk about that with each other. They wanted to talk about why are we so critical of each other? Why is there so much stress in our workplaces? How can we apply some of these concepts? And they also sometimes, if you've never been exposed to Thich Nhat Hanh, and I can translate the language
right,
for them,
right.
But some of them here, you can never, never fight violence with violence. And they're saying to me, well, what the hell am I supposed to do when somebody's beating the crap out of somebody? Am I supposed to stand there and watch them? So so some of it is literally a translation thing. But they're getting it. And what's so great about it is for some of them, we all learn in different ways. It's one of the things I've really discovered about learning in the job that I'm in and having to do a lot of overseeing the teaching of young recruits. So for some of them, eating meditation is wonderful. For others, it doesn't work at all. For some of them, walking meditation is wonderful. For some of them, it doesn't work at all. For some of them, sitting meditation is wonderful. But to watch them getting the sort of understanding and exposure that I had early on, just to see that there's some richness and nourishment here that you have to, and what we talked about yesterday is my first Zen activity as a little girl was baseball, because that was the first activity that I ever performed where I was so absorbed in it, my total focus and concentration was there and nothing else was present.
And that's a definition of Zen.
That's my definition of Zen. And so you have to, as a practitioner, find the ways to practice that resonate with you. And if you are faithful to your practice will be faithful to you. But you have to help make that. So you have to find ways that help bring about the understanding of mindfulness. So that's one of the things we were talking about yesterday in terms of, okay, well, how do we apply this and how do we find... But police officers, as you can imagine, the major problem is we deal with being hypervigilant all the time, so we're off the scale up here. You know, you're looking around you all the time, wondering where that next problem is coming from. And if you don't have a way to come back down and find some ways to take care of yourself, you're going to find ways to stay up there because it feels good in an odd sort of way, in dysfunctional ways.
It makes a lot of sense to me what you just said about, you know, I asked Ty, how is your teaching different when you're speaking to these different kinds of groups? I mean, this year he's also doing a retreat for Hollywood filmmakers and for members of Congress, right?
Isn't he amazing?
And people of color, right? So I said, so is there a difference when you speak to these groups or law enforcement officers? And he said, and his answer was so interesting, that he has to come to understand the particular suffering of that group of people. And sort of what you're describing to me about police officers is needing to bring their particular suffering here.
It's a special form, and Ty has really taken time. I love Ty so much. He's taken so much time to understand it. And where our suffering comes from is really two places. One, we deal with the 5% of the worst part of society. So you start, you know, you don't want your kids exposed to that. You don't want your partner exposed to that. You it's got to go somewhere. You don't know who to talk to about it, but it starts to affect the way you see people. That's one thing. And the accumulated stress of, you know, if you're a young officer and you go to your first accident scene where somebody's head has been rolled over, you go to a homicide scene and you see very grisly details, you go to lots of different things that one incident may not cause it, but the accumulated sort of stuff post-traumatic stress is made from, and you start shutting down and you don't realize it. So you need tools to keep your heart open and soft.
I think this is fabulous. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Yeah.